Welcome to Game On with Grace, where we're not just talking cricket wins and losses, we're talking off-field antics, guilty pleasures, and the drive that never quits. Hey everyone, I'm Grace Hayden, and today we're joined by one of the most fascinating stories in world cricket, a player who's balancing international sport and Silicon Valley life at the exact same time. Saurabh is a USA international cricketer, software engineer, and former India under-19 standout who became a global sensation after helping the United States defeat Pakistan at the 2024 T20 World Cup. Now, off the field, he's built an equally impressive career in tech. While working at Oracle, he's juggling life as a husband, father, and professional athlete. His journey from Mumbai cricket prodigy to Cornell University and the USA national team is unlike anything we've seen in the sport. We'll talk about pressure, reinvention, balancing two demanding worlds, and what it's really like becoming an overnight sensation while still showing up to work on Monday morning. Game on. Hey, Saurabh, welcome to Game On with Grace. Really excited to have you on the podcast. Tell me, though, where are you and what are you up to at the moment? What's been going on?
Hi, Grace. Yeah, first of all, thanks for having me. And I'm looking forward to this our conversation. I've just landed a couple of days ago from an ODI series in Nepal. And I have a week's time with family until I fly back to Toronto for a tri-series with Netherlands and Canada, and then heading straight into Major League in Dallas. So yeah, a busy couple of months upcoming.
Very, very busy time ahead. How important is it for you to really soak up the time with family, especially when you're on the road so much?
Yeah, it's been tough in the last 2 years, especially. I have a daughter who's going to turn 2 in July, and it's very special. It becomes harder now to leave home, actually. But it's nice to see her grow up. And yeah, I'm looking forward to getting to spend more time or having them travel with me on tour as much as possible. So we'll see how that goes.
How much do they get to travel around with you?
So my wife also has a full-time job. She's also a computer engineer. So we try to do, she joins me mostly during at Major League. She was there for the World Cup in India, Sri Lanka. So we pick a couple of tours in a year and she tries to join me. Yeah.
Oh, that's really hard that she's got a full-time job. She's a full-time mum. And then you've also got a full-time job of being a professional athlete. Balancing it all must be good fun, but a challenge as well.
Yeah, we take it one step at a time and try to plan towards our next upcoming event and just, we're flowing like the river.
Yeah, oh, that's a good analogy. I like it. Now, this show is all about competitive drive, so I thought that we'd start with some Game On icebreakers. So pretty much, it's just going to ask you about how competitive you really are. So first up, what's something that's completely non-sport related that you find that you're way too competitive about?
Non-sport related that I'm competitive about? I'll say I'm very passionate about science and technology. I like to understand the depth of how things work. So I can keep asking you questions all day until my doubts are satisfied. So in that way, I'd consider myself competitive in that space. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Just wanting to know more. No stone unturned. Well, that's great. Have you ever gone way too far trying to win something that absolutely didn't matter? Like a card game or, I don't know, just a simple...
Yeah, we get quite competitive when we play board games as a friends group.
Ah, okay. What board games do you go to?
Yeah, if I'm playing, I'm playing to win.
So. Same. I'm exactly the same way. But what board games are you playing? What's your go-tos?
Board games... keep changing. We used to play one game called as Risk. Then there was a game called Catan. lots of
okay.
They keep changing. We play poker. We have poker nights.
Okay.
We
yeah.
used to. That has changed now after baby, but
yeah, yeah. You've settled down a little bit more.
Yeah.
I like it. Okay. How do you balance elite cricket with tech career? Which world is more competitive?
I think from a pressure standpoint, I definitely say competitive cricket because it's basically equivalent of your day in the office, but so many people are watching you and you can't hide. Like, you have to be the best version of yourself on the field. So in that sense, handling a pressure, taking failure, you learn quite a lot very fast as an athlete. But in the tech job, it's again, you learn other skills, like how you optimize your work, how you think analytically, and sort of they help in each other. So my thinking in the tech world helps me plan better as an athlete. And the teamwork and handling failure and those things, like the life values that I learn from sports, they help me take it to the tech world, I'd say. So they complement each other.
Yeah. That's amazing. Okay. What is one moment in your cricket career that best sums up your competitive drive?
One moment, I would say the 2024 World Cup, the game versus Pakistan that we played. I think that was the first time we played against a top nation in a World Cup, and where we all believed as a team that we wanted to not just participate, but we wanted to compete. And we didn't think about the results while playing the game, but it was really great to see and get that win that we all worked hard for, and we finally got it. We had to push till the super over, and we had to really fight and test our teamwork. So that was one highlight, I think.
What were the nerves like in that super over? We all know that super overs bring immense pressure to both sides. But for you guys, when you're playing, you know, Pakistan, which is a very cricket established country, and potentially you're, I guess, really making shockwaves being from the US team beating Pakistan. Tell me, were you all really nervous? Were you weirdly calm? What was the vibes like heading out there before you had to attack the super over?
Before the super over, I went through a little bit of a roller coaster of emotions, where initially I was nervous when I was told that I'm bowling the over. But then whilst warming up, I started focusing on the process and not what's going to happen. And then we had a good communication. Coach Stewart and the captain as well spoke, and we discussed the plan. And once we had clarity, I convinced myself that the best I can do is give my 100% and just try and execute my skill every ball and ball after ball. And that's the best I can do, and let the result take care of itself. And in the over itself as well, went through a roller coaster. There was a wide, there was a boundary. But then I stuck to the plan and I kept the same plan. I'm glad it worked in the end.
Oh, it absolutely worked. And look at the result. That'll always be embedded in the history of cricket. So congratulations. And what an honor as well to bowl that over. I mean, your team is entrusting you with such an important task.
Definitely.
And
yes,
you're probably, you know, lucky that you can keep your cool, because so many, you know, so many players can either go into fight or flight mode. So you obviously went into fight mode and pulled off the dream.
Yeah, I'm grateful that they trusted me. And it also helped to have such a supportive crowd in Dallas. With, I had my mom and my wife who was expecting a baby at that time. So it was very special in that sense too. Like, everybody's family was there. All the families got together, and it just felt like we all came together for the love of the game. So it was a great scene after the game. Yeah, It was special.
Oh, what did you guys do after the game? Did you go up and give your wife a big hug? What happened?
All the families came to the field and we took nice photos. Like the teammates who had the kids, they played on the ground as well. So it was nice. It was a nice outing for us, yeah.
Such a special moment to be able to share with family, because obviously when you're a professional cricketer, not often do you get to look up into the crowd and you have familiar faces. So when you have such a significant moment in your career to look up and have those people around you that really make you as a person too and as a player, it would be a really, really nice feeling, I'm sure.
Definitely, yeah.
It's so difficult in India, right? And I can't even imagine, but just as an outsider looking in, the amount of people that love the game of cricket. And when you're a child who's progressing through the ranks, it's really hard to sort of make your break into it because you're competing against so many different people for, 11 spots really for the international side in, you know, different formats. But there's really essentially 11 spots on the field and then you have a bench. But still, when you are faced with that kind of challenge, I mean, if I was just to kind of get out my thoughts right now with how the India team is playing at the top level, they have so many different options, even at the professional level that they're at now, that I think that's why it makes the India team so good and so unbeatable, is that they are all competing not only with each other, but, you know, also with the other people that are knocking on the door wanting their spot. There's just so many people that you could slot in at any time. And I mean, to even break into that team as maybe someone who's a new up-and-comer, like you look at a Suryavanshi, for example, the 15-year-old who's making shockwaves in cricket right now. He's really banging on the door to be the next big thing. And I'm sure a lot of the openers in that India team, they're going, okay, this kid could be taking our spot any day. But I'd love to know your take and insight on, obviously you're originally from India, but how difficult it is to actually make it in India and having to, you know, go and try and play in another country another sort of set of circumstances. But how challenging is it really to be the best of the best in India?
Yeah, like you rightly said, in India, it's always been, there's so many players who are so good. It's pretty challenging to sort of get noticed. And I'd say it's a fact that you do have to peak at the right time in front of the right people watching, so that they get a sense that you're promising, and a spot needs to be open in the team. If you're performing in first-class cricket, but there's no spot in the team, there's so many cricketers like who aced the first class. They've scored thousands of runs, but there was no spot open in the Indian team, so they couldn't play that much for India. And now we are seeing so many players who can. I think if you pick two or three Indian teams, they'll still do well at the world stage. So that's the kind of numbers they have. And you need some kind of it becomes tough to keep yourself motivated if you're not on the right side of it. But that's the best you can do. The best you can do is keep bettering yourself 1% at a time, and just hope that you get a window. And I'm sure if you persist long enough, you do get a window. And there are examples of that. Not just in Indian cricket. I mean, if you take 15 years back, I mean, Australia was a team like that. The late 90s to the mid 2000s, Australia was unbeatable. Like if you look at the Ricky Ponting-led side, after Steve Waugh's side, that team was stacked. And now India is showing that. So it's a trend, I think. It's a phase.
It definitely is. And I think that's what makes teams just unbeatable through patches is when they have that internal competition or within their, you know, domestic sort of competitions as well. You could literally have multiple different teams picked and they would still win. I mean, I know, for example, Dad, he was out of the Australian side for 7 years before he actually got an opportunity to cement his spot. I mean, he made it and then he just wasn't quite good enough yet. And 7 years of having to stick at it and sort of find other options around the world. And then he finally got the call up. So if you do stick at it, there are examples, as you said. However, it is so tough to, I guess, mentally keep on the same trajectory of going, okay, this is my goal. This is my goal. I've got to stick at it. And sometimes, you know, it doesn't happen for you. And we see so many great cricketers, you know, that are incredible in the domestic tournaments, just not actually ever make it to play for their country. So it is such an amazing opportunity and really achievement for anyone that plays for their country, whether that be the US or India or Australia or South Africa. You know, it's such an amazing achievement to be able to go, I play for my country. And I'm sure it's such a proud feeling too.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the national jersey you wear, like every time I got to wear the Indian under-19 jersey, and that itself felt like a pinnacle moment at that time, because the under-19 World Cup was what we grew up watching as 15-year-olds, and we looked forward to that day. I mean, we couldn't win that World Cup, but I remember the day I got the call and I got the jersey. It was really emotional. And the same feeling in the US, because I never even expected to pick up a cricket ball again when I moved to US, because I moved for education. I actually gave up on the sport and I tried to start my life from scratch here, and cricket somehow found its way back into my life. So it was an even more special journey here in the US. And that being said, another thing I want to say is I'm a big fan of Matt Hayden as well. He used to actually intimidate me just because I used to watch him as a kid. The way he used to smash all the bowlers that time. Yeah, I'm a big fan.
He was pretty scary, hey. Honestly, I even look back at videos. I don't know who that guy is, because the guy that I see is just the big gentle giant who's just Dad. So I can't even imagine having to bowl down to the big DOS. He was a pretty big, intimidating man. Okay, let's take a quick break. But when we come back, I want to get to know the human behind the hype. Stay with us. Let's move to human behind the hype. This is all about getting to know you outside of all your amazing cricketing accolades. I want to start with what we were just talking about previously, how you moved from India to study and go down an education pathway. But you mentioned that you sort of gave up on cricket a little bit. Talk to me through why you sort of reached that point.
So I played under-19 World Cup in 2010. And post that, my cricketing trajectory sort of stagnated, I would say. I couldn't establish myself in the Mumbai first class. I was in and out of the side, getting a game here and there. And mid-season, I think 2015, I got dropped from the side. And in parallel, I was doing my undergraduate degree. So 2009 to 2013, I graduated from college and I decided to give 2 full years to cricket. I made my first class debut in 2013. But like I said, I didn't get all the games. I was in and out of the side, warming the benches a lot. And then I was doing tryouts for IPL, but kind of not getting picked. So it was tough to carry on, where I also didn't feel whether, I didn't know whether I was good enough, first of all, to play at that level, because you see so many people doing so well around you. And since I was good at education, I wanted to give life another chance. It was tough because the only thing I grew up as a kid in a cricket crazy community, I dreamt of playing for India and I wanted to have that highest accolade. But I thought it was a practical call to make because I didn't feel I would play for India. I didn't want to be the guy who's just playing club cricket. And I wanted to give life a chance. So I took it when I got an opportunity to come to Cornell, which is also one of the top universities for computer science. So it was a great opportunity for me to escape that. I was kind of depressed as well, I'd say, because not getting picked. I was not working for 2 years because I gave full time to cricket. And I could see my peers in college doing well in their tech jobs, or some had already moved to the US or other parts of the world and they've carried on with their life. And I felt I was like a little bit falling back here, nor am I making it big there. So it's nor this, nor that. So it was a tough moment for me. But yeah, now that I look back, I'm glad I took that call and then a new life happened here.
Well, thank you for sharing that because it's so vulnerable to obviously open up about. But I think you're really not alone in having to go through that sort of phase in your life and assessing whether you want to keep going down a path that you kind of feel like's not quite working. Or do you go down a path where you could make a new life for yourself and give yourself a chance to sort of build something else? Being a professional athlete comes with so many challenges. There's so much pressure. There's so much anxiety that it also brings. But it really is so difficult to break through to the top international level, whatever country that you're, you know, gunning to be in their top team. So having to face that difficult decision of letting go of something that you've always dreamed about being a child, always something that you're so goal orientated and you're running towards, to let go of that dream and be okay with that, I'm sure was such a difficult decision. But when you look back at that decision now, how happy are you that you made the choice to move to the US?
Yeah, I'm very happy that I confronted firstly the truth, because people tend to still keep going in a belief that one thing, things will work out. But you need to confront the truth that, hey, I wasn't good enough. So I don't see myself playing for India. And that acceptance is the first thing. And then the second thing is to look for avenues. Once you accept, then other doors will slowly open for you. And then you go with an open mind. I had no expectation to play cricket here. I didn't even know what's going to happen with my life here. I just started from scratch again. I just came to college. It's the first time I lived by myself. I actually learned to live independently for the first time. I started off with my roommates and everything, and then slowly. So I met my better half at college. So everything started happening for the good, and miracles happened. I got a job in San Francisco and then started playing weekend cricket for fun in the US. Few guys who were playing for the US team happened to be in my club, and they noticed me, started taking me around US for weekend tournaments. And then slowly here and there I built a name again. People started knowing that I moved to the US, and through performances then the national team coach noticed me, and then slowly I got my break in the national team and then grew with the team, because the team itself was in Division 3 at that time. So it was like joining a new startup. So I always give that analogy, and we grew with the team, and 4 or 5 of us are in that from that time. We are in the team, like Nosh, the Steven Taylor who was there in the team, Aaron Jones, like a few guys who's there since 2017, 2018 that we've been there. So it's been a big journey now to see Major League and it going mainstream. We got into 2 World Cups. We can potentially play an Olympics in 2 years. So it's huge. It's great for us. Yeah. And everybody has gone through their share of sacrifices.
For sure. Yeah, it's really exciting to see how much both the US and Canada are also growing in cricket. I mean, it's not just about, you know, the typical nations that we've seen forever and a day. There's so many new nations that are coming together and they're building really great sides. Like, I mean, that 2024 World Cup was exceptional from you guys in the US. Honestly, I mean, to beat Pakistan, that's an amazing achievement. They're a very, very good side. They've been, you know, playing cricket for ever in a day. They've had teams in World Cups, in whatever you want to call it, forever in a day. So to beat them really is such a credit to the US team. And it showed the world that you're not ones to mess with.
Yeah, I think a lot of things helped us leading to that. So we've already had a couple of seasons of Major League. I think that helped us big time because we got to rub shoulders with some of the best cricketers around the world who played in an MLC. We got to train under top quality coaching staff. Like Ricky Ponting was my coach. What else can I expect? He was my childhood. I used to watch him on TV and it was like great to actually work under him. And just to get into that professional setup and doing well there, we started believing that we had the pieces of the puzzle, but we just had to come together. And leading up to the World Cup also, we had two preparatory series. We played a 5-game series versus Canada. And then we played a 3-game series versus Bangladesh, which we also won 2-1. And even Bangladesh is a very good team. So that also gave us some confidence that, yes, we can compete against good teams if we get our act together, especially in a T20 format. Because T20 format, it's about you get one good partnership or 2-3 good overs, you're back in the game. So T20 kind of gives us a chance to compete with top teams. But hopefully we build better and transfer that to the longer format as well in the 50-over, in the immediate next goal for us to qualify for the next year's 50-over World Cup. And that would be a big statement if we can do that, because that's a sustained effort. It's not like 2-3 overs will determine that we were lucky to win, but we need to do sustained good performances to win an ODI game.
Yeah. No, I'm sure you definitely will. I mean, you've got an amazing side. So, yes, I'm sure it'll all happen and you'll qualify for that World Cup. I want to go back because I definitely want to mention MLC a little bit later in the podcast, but I want to talk about what your college experience was when you moved to the US. How different is the US from living in India? Did you come across any challenges when you moved? What did you love about the college experience? How was that phase of your life?
Yeah, firstly, big culture shock because it was a different world. Especially my college is like in a student town and it's up a hill and it's on almost like Harry Potter land. It's like Hogwarts, like all the constructions are like castles. There's a clock tower. There are gorges, waterfalls. So it was beautiful. But at the same time, it was a very new place for me. I had no clue about how to get my way around. I was lucky that my mom's younger brother, he lives in DC. So he took me first there. He got me set up. He showed me Walmart and how to get some basic stuff. And I didn't even know how to cook. I learned everything like with my roommates, everything slowly. I started my first few weeks, months were just on pizza and chips and everything. And then I sort of learned how to do grocery, cooking, washing the dishes, doing my assignments, everything. I started getting organized. Made friends, and yeah, slowly a new life started basically. Yeah, it was nice.
Oh, I'm glad that you stopped with the pizza and the chips and you learned how to cook. Tell me, I hear that you've got a film that's being made about you. Can you tell us a little bit about that? And I mean, did you ever think that a two-time Oscar winner would be making a story about your life?
Yeah, never in my dreams I would have even thought of that. So I'm really grateful to Willow TV, first of all, for identifying this as a potential concept for a movie, and then to Adam and his entire team for the entire duration of the year, 1 year that we worked on it. And the movie is called The Long Game, and it essentially shows the journey through ups and downs, and it's meant to highlight that if you persist enough and are honest towards yourself and keep trying to become a better version of yourself in any field, miracles do happen, and good things do happen, I guess.
Oh, and absolutely. Great things have happened for you in your career. So congratulations that you're being recognized in such an amazing way. What do you hope that people who watch this sort of feel and take away?
I feel people should be able to connect with the human in me and identify it just like their own journey, because I'd say there's nothing special per se. It's the same set of ups and downs that we all go through. It's just the labels are different because the fields people work on are different. Each individual journey is unique, but there are common patterns of challenges, ups and downs, test of character when situations test you about how badly you want something, and even when you're not seeing an immediate result, how much work are you willing to put in to just stay there and show up every day? And once you keep showing up, keep showing up, that one narrow door opens up as soon as long as the moment when you feel like everything's closing in on you, once a ray of hope shows up and you grab onto that, and then you grab onto the next one. And that's how ultimately you will reach the destination, I would say.
Yeah, one door closes and 10 others open, and just taking the opportunities that arise.
Yep.
Oh, that's amazing. What an incredible story and life you've lived. Do you feel like you've lived like 10 lives?
I think every cricket tournament is a life in itself, because it's
yeah,
a different challenge, a different location in the world. You're meeting with people from such diverse cultures, especially within our team itself. Throughout these 7 years that I've played, so many people who've grown up in such different parts of the world, and we get to learn so much from each other apart from cricket as well, as to how they go about their lives, the different unique challenges that they face, and how we come together for the love of the game. I think that game is the common thing that keeps us all together.
We're going to take a short break, but when we're back, we're talking cricket, pressure, and the moments that shaped Saurabh's career. Okay, well, let's move to Sports Roundtable. We're going to talk a little bit more about the achievements that you've had throughout your career. Not every single one, otherwise we'd be here all day chatting. But let's talk about, first of all, that Pakistan game a little bit more, the Super Over. What do you remember most in those few moments of, you know, having the challenge of bowling? I mean, you mentioned earlier that, you know, you were just taking it ball by ball, but what was was it a sense of relief when you knew that you guys had won that game? Was it pure excitement? How much did that really mean to not just you, but also the team itself?
So for me personally, I really wanted to make sure that I don't let my team down, because to get the game to a tie from the tough spot that we were in, every single one of us, not even just the playing 11, even the substitutes who fielded, they had fielded so well and everybody had given their 100% to get us to that tie phase. So I knew that some responsibility lied on my shoulders to at least get the team across the line, somehow make sure. That one thing was there. But the other thing was, the best I can do is my process. So every ball, I remember I consciously tried to close my eyes, give myself a smile, and then bowl the ball with clarity as to what I wanted to bowl. That's one thing I remember. For every ball, I tried to do that. And irrespective of the result, I analyzed as to, was that the ball I wanted to bowl? If yes, then I'll stick to my plans. So even if the first ball was a wide, that was the plan. I wanted to bowl a wide Yorker. I missed it slightly. That didn't mean that was a bad ball. I'll try that again. So I'll do the same thing again. So that's the process-wise. And after the game, I just felt a sigh of relief. Actually, I think I went down on my knees and then everybody came and hugged. And then, so yeah, it was just like, okay, at least we're through. We wanted to get this win so badly and we're through. Yeah. And then it sunk in when people started following and everything, yeah.
It's so funny. So many cricketers say that every time something good happens in a game or in a series, that it is that sigh of relief rather than excitement, because it's sort of hard to get excited until the job's done.
Yeah.
It's not really until you lift the trophy or you finish the tournament that you feel that excitement. But I guess, you know, they, in the moment when they achieve, maybe when a batter gets a double century or a century, or when, I don't know, a bowler takes 5 for, it's kind of hard to get excited until post the game, because in the moment it's more, oh, thank goodness.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately it is a team game. So you have to keep going until you get the win for the team. So until the last ball is bowled, but then you do enjoy after the game, like once it sunk in, and then when family came in, and then in the evening we had a good time. We spent good time together, and then we did enjoy the win that day. And then back to business from the next day, because we have more games in the tournament. So yeah, that's part of our journey, I guess. Like, you get to enjoy those small moments, and then you're back to square one, because the next game you start from scratch.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, let's talk about MLC, because it is the tournament on everyone's minds. It's starting up on the very soon, actually. Your first match is Friday, the 19th of June. But talk to me about the tournament itself and how much it's really done for, I guess, progressing cricket and maybe even knowledge of cricket within the US, but also just, you know, discovering new up-and-coming talent or talent being able to grow because of the access of having incredible coaching, also superstar international players as well, mixing with them, learning their tactics, kind of being a sponge. How important has that been for the growth of maybe yourself, but also others in the US team, but also the opportunity to play with some superstars, but also be involved with some minds of great athletes that once were, you know, superstars themselves, like a Ricky Ponting, as you mentioned earlier, who's your coach. But just talk to me about the opportunity to play MLC and how much it's really done for the US.
I think it's been the backbone of our success as a national team, if I could say it very candidly, because the kind of exposure as a player that we got, before that it was mainly we just training in indoors and then heading straight into tournaments. 10 days, we used to meet each other at the tour, practice for a few days, and then head into an ODI game. Literally it was that. To now then have proper stadiums, playing with world-class cricketers from all over the world. You have a trainer, a proper bowling coach, batting coach, guiding you with your plans. You have players like Faf du Plessis, Steve Smith, Travis Head, Glenn Maxwell. Everybody is playing with you. You get to know how they go about their preparation. And once you start doing well in that platform, you start believing in yourself more as well. That validation comes in. From a youngster perspective, while training sessions, there are so many youngsters who come and show up at practice, who we've also seen then successively do well in minor league. And then 3 or 4, 5 guys, 22, 23 year olds are actually now in the US national team. If you look at Sanjay Krishnamurthy, like the way he's raised his game, I think SF Unicorns has had a big part in his evolution as a cricketer. I've seen his batting go from, he's raised it a lot, and the fitness, his power hitting, it's been improving a lot. So we see youngsters upcoming. Under 19, a US team did well as well. And all this is, MLC is a big backbone because they've been building stadiums. Now there's another stadium in LA. We started playing in San Francisco. So already 4 stadiums that we can play, and potentially more. And hopefully it'll become a full-fledged domestic setup throughout the year as well. And MLC also, I think, helps with other open tournaments that that happen on long weekends. So we have Houston Open, this Open, that Open. So 4-5 tournaments that players get to play throughout the year. So the quality of domestic cricket throughout the year is improving. And we're getting to play on turf wickets with competitive cricketers throughout the year. And you can see that the national team is now getting consistently better and not just one-off games here and there.
Yeah. Yeah, the benefit is immense. What excites you most, though, about where you think MLC is going and the growth of US cricket?
I think we are at a very good crossroads where we have a golden opportunity as a national team through MLC, through the platform we get in MLC, to potentially play 3 world events in 2 years. So next year's ODI World Cup, T20 World Cup in 2028, and the LA Olympics. MLC is going to be a big part of, and MLC is now growing. The season is getting bigger. I think we played 10 games this season, and hopefully more teams coming in subsequent years will mean more local players will get that exposure and we'll have a bigger pool. So hopefully we slowly build into getting that phase like we talked about how Australia and India were. I think we're still a fair bit away from that, but still it's building and MLC is going to be a big part of that to get it to that stage. 5 to 10 years, hopefully we become a full member nation and we get to play bilaterals with top teams. I think that's the goal for sure. It's not too far away.
Absolutely not. You've got all of the stepping stones and the building blocks to really be a very high-level, successful team that are knocking on the doors of these big nations that have been playing cricket forever and a day. I mean, you almost beat India in that World Cup match this year. That was so close. I was sitting there watching with Dad and we were going, is India going to lose here? What is happening?
Yeah, that was a pretty special moment, yes.
I'm sure. I'd love you to share what that moment was like.
I think for me personally, it was like a full circle moment because to get to play in Mumbai in the stadium where I trained and as a 13-year-old kid for USA against India, it was a special moment. My personal bowling didn't go that well. I got hit in the last over. But the team did really well and we really had a big chance until the very end, I'd say. I think they pulled it back, but that showed that we are not a team who will win one-off games. We can consistently do well as well if we keep building. So it gave us the confidence there. That World Cup was very special for us in that sense.
Yeah, it definitely was. That was a really, really special game. You guys played out of your skin. It was sad that you didn't get the result in the end. I was backing you guys the whole way. Time for a quick break, but when we come back, we've got something a little different up our sleeve. It's time for a little blind ranking challenge, Silicon Valley edition. I'm going to give you 10 prompts that are related to a software engineering or things in the Silicon Valley. You've got to rank each of them 1 to 10 as I say them, but you don't know what's coming up next and you can't change your answers, okay?
Yeah, I'll try.
Perfect. All right, your first one is biohacking. Where do you think that sits on the scale of 1 to 10? 1 being the best, 10 being the worst.
5.
All right, your next one is coding at 2 a.m.
7.
Noise cancelling headphones.
9. Yeah. I'm okay to work in chaos, yeah.
Well, you work in cricket stadiums, for goodness sake, so you're very equipped. LinkedIn.
I haven't updated it lately, so 10.
Okay, standing desks.
Standing desks are good. I like to take a walk and stand, so I would say 6, yeah.
Okay. Coffee.
I'm not much of a coffee person. 8, yeah.
Really? So what would you have it as, 10?
I used to be tea, but now I stopped both. I just have juices.
Oh, wow. And hydration,
yeah.
Fair enough, because it is very dehydrating, coffee. I'm a big coffee drinker, but I am Australian, so can you blame me? All right, vibe coding.
Vibe coding will be 3.
Wow. What is vibe coding?
I just do get into the flow, like with my intuition, and then I don't know what's the outcome. I'll just keep doing marathon. I'll just keep coding.
Wow. Just coding away. Blue light glasses.
My 10 is exhausted, right? Yeah, 4. Yeah,
it is. You can't go back and change it. Okay. Using AI a little bit too much.
I would say 1. I'm trying consciously to use it a lot. And it's been very helpful. It's been very helpful. And that is the way to go.
I love AI.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I would hate for someone to check my ChatGPT history with the questions that I ask it.
Interesting. I have deep philosophical discussions with ChatGPT, and it's actually pretty good.
Right? And it gets to know you so well. I'm like, how do you know all of this information about me? I share too much, obviously. Last one, Patagonia vests.
Yeah, 2, but it wouldn't be that high.
Can't put anywhere else.
But it might be a 5 or a 6, but yeah, that's fine. I'm happy with the 10.
Okay, so if you were to change any and reorder them now that you're looking at your blind ranking, so for everyone that's listening, you've got AI as number 1, 2 as the Patagonia vest, 3 as vibe coding, 4 blue light glasses, 5 biohacking, 6 standing desk, 7 2 a.m. coding, 8 coffee, 9 headphones, 10 LinkedIn. Anything that you're changing and swapping in that list?
Biohacking, if I would extend its definition to taking care of your body better in terms of I do my daily yoga practice and everything. I try to eat well. So that might be higher. That might be actually one. And then...
You're vegan, correct? And you practice yoga every day?
Yes.
Yeah, wow. When did you become a vegan?
Post-COVID, 2020. So the seed got planted when we adopted a puppy. And then slowly started reading more and learning. Just realizations happened. And then I felt like if I'm able to sustain myself and be fit enough, which I was with that diet, and it's been going, going strong since then, and it's been good. Yeah,
awesome. I mean, there's a lot of athletes that turn to veganism. I mean, there was a whole documentary on how beneficial that lifestyle is for professional athletes.
So yeah, maybe the biohacking might move up, I guess, if you encompass all that in this. Yeah, that's all, I guess. Apart from that, I'm happy with the ranking.
Okay, great. Love it. We're going to take our final break, but when we're back, we'll wrap up the show. Well, we're going to move to the final whistle. So this is all about rapid fire questions just to wrap up the podcast. How's that sound?
Sounds good. I'll try my best.
Great. All right. Let's get into it. What's something that you've changed your mind about in sport recently?
To not harp too much on outcomes and just trying to be the best version of myself in every game and understand what the team expects me to do and be that 1% extra in on every tour instead of gauging myself by the results the team achieves, because that's ultimately not in my control.
No, I like that. Okay. What's the best piece of advice you've gotten from a coach?
From a coach, you can only give 100%. You cannot give 200%. If you're giving 100, if you think you can give more, then you haven't been in your 100%.
Yeah. Correct. Which teammate would you want on your trivia team or former teammate, if you like?
Trivia team.
Yes.
Good one. Trivia team, maybe youngsters, I would say. Sanjay, he's also quite tech savvy and he knows stuff. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. You need the person that's like a fun fact guru. The ones that always bring out the niche little fun facts for you in the group. So yeah. Okay. Cricketing superpower you wish that you had.
Cricketing superpower, I wish that I had more pace. I've never been as quick. Speed.
Thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate you coming on the podcast. It's been such a pleasure to get to know you and share your journey a little bit. You've achieved so many things in your career. I feel like you've lived almost 10 lives. So thank you so much for your time. It's been great to have a chat.
No, thanks for having me as well. I loved our conversation. Yeah.
If you want to check out Saurabh's documentary, it will premiere on Willow TV on Wednesday, June 17th at 8 p.m. Eastern time. So make sure you tune in and check it out. But that's all for this episode of Game On with Grace. If you loved this conversation, make sure you hit the follow button or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you share the episode with a friend, because we've got so many more legendary guests, hilarious debates, and big stories coming your way. So stay tuned. I'm Grace Hayden, and until next time, keep competitive.